I'm Alicia Menendez of HuffPost Live, and today for Leonard Lope, you're listening to WNYC and WNYC.org. What are you making for dinner tonight? Whether you're going to be eating arroz con pollo or stir-fried tofu and bok choy with quinoa, chances are the food on your plate has been touched by corporate America. Beginning with the deregulation movement of the Reagan years, the entire food chain in the U.S. has experienced massive consolidation. Today, a handful of agribusiness companies control everything from seeds, fertilizers, and farm implements to the processing and distribution of food, as well as the retail grocery chains. Companies like Walmart, Kraft, Costco, and Dole wield tremendous power in Washington, on Wall Street, and in the growing fields and overcrowded pens of factory farms. How can we restore our food system to ensure that our health and the health of the planet comes before corporate profit? Here to discuss this is Winona Howder. She's the executive director of Food and Water Watch, a Washington, D.C.-based organization, and the author of a new book, Foodopoly, The Battle Over the Future of Food and Farming in America, that's published by the New Press. Welcome.
So glad to be here.
So give us a sense of how farming has changed over the last 50 years.
Well, first of all, we now have such a few number of companies who really dictate food and farm policy. There are basically 20 companies that sell all of the brands that you see in the grocery store and dictate the way that farming is done because they have so much economic and political power. So I think that's really the biggest change is we have many fewer farmers, and those farmers don't have a market to sell into. And, you know, too often farmers are actually blamed for the problems with the food system, but they're more victims like consumers of the changes that have taken place, especially since the Reagan administration really eviscerated antitrust law. And I don't think most people realize that because the changes have been gradual.
When we say factory farm, what does that mean?
Well, a factory farm is an industrialized farm that grows livestock. So if you think about poultry, you may have 100,000 chickens in one warehouse-type barn. And the integrator, so at Tyson's or Purdue or Sanderson Farms, one of the big chicken contractors, controls every aspect of producing that chicken, from the genetics of the bird to the antibiotic-laced feed, to picking up the bird and then taking it to its facility to slaughter. And then in the case of Tyson's, which is the largest meat company in the United States and the second largest in the world, Tyson sells the poultry as a brand in the grocery store. Meanwhile, you have these contract growers who are, well, they think, some of them think of themselves as serfs because they're like chicken sitters, because Tyson basically uses their farm and their warehouse, and they assume all of the liability and the waste, but Tyson gets all of the profit. One of those contract growers makes around $15,000 a year. Pretty outrageous.
That is outrageous. Now, take us back. You talked about the Reagan administration. What happened in the 80s that gave way to these factory farms?
Well, you know, in the 60s and 70s, antitrust law was somewhat strengthened, and the Federal Trade Commission, which is one of the main federal agencies that actually regulates commerce and competition, was growing stronger. It had staff added and was doing more investigations, especially into food monopolies. But when Ronald Reagan was elected, he was elected on a ticket of deregulation and making it easier for large companies to be profitable. And so his administration at the Federal Trade Commission basically came in and changed antitrust law. And actually, writing Foodopoly, I had the opportunity to interview the person who was a commissioner, the chair of the commission there, when Reagan came into office. And his name is Michael Perchuk, and he told me just a horrendous tale of how they came in, they cut staff, they cut budgets, they basically legalized things that hadn't been legal in the past, and they narrowed the law so that what's considered a monopoly is much narrower than it was before. And Commissioner Perchuk and some of his Republican colleagues wrote a scathing 800-page report that to Congress that went through all of the things that the Reagan administration did. And, you know, no administration since then has been brave enough to come back and look at antitrust law, even though we have an economic system that is supposedly built on competition. All public policy is geared at allowing industries to consolidate. And as we know, it's not just the food industry.
So when you talk about major changes to foreign policy in the last 30 years, is that what you're talking about?
Well, I'm talking about the ability of corporations to get so large through mergers and acquisitions that they buy up their competitors, which makes them wealthier. And as they grow wealthier, they gain more political power. Their trade associations become wealthier. And they're able to basically impact our federal laws. And they also keep the marketplace from being competitive, both for farmers and consumers. So farmers don't have a marketplace to sell into, you know, for instance, livestock growers. There's no one to buy independently grown chicken, even beef today. You know, four companies control beef production. So it's a very unfair situation for the grower. And then for the consumer, it means they pay a higher price. These companies dictate labeling laws. They dictate how many pesticides you have in your vegetables because they have so much political power. But, you know, this all happens behind the scenes, so people don't really understand what's happening and how our federal agencies are being basically challenged by these companies if they do anything that's protective of consumers. I mean, people kind of know that about Congress. They know that we have a system of legalized bribery, but they don't understand how the executive branch, through its nominations and the people that it puts in charge of agencies, are able to really make things friendlier for companies.
Legalized bribery, those are some fighting words. I'm Alicia Menendez in today for Leonard Lopate. Our guest is Winona Howder. She is the author of Foodopoly, The Battle Over the Future of Food and Farming in America. You are listening to WNYC and WNYC.org. Winona, can you give us a sense, describe the life of a chicken that lives on one of these factory farms?
Absolutely. You know, I had an opportunity in writing Foodopoly to actually go and visit one of these factory chicken farms, a woman named Valerie Ruddle, who's very brave because she will be punished by the company that she grows chickens for. But she invited me to the farm so I could actually see what the life of a chicken is. First of all, a chicken lives fewer than 6 weeks. This is a broiler, a meat chicken.
So all chickens are baby chickens?
All chickens are baby chickens. And these are the scrawniest, most pitiful looking things that you can imagine. They live in a warehouse where they have, about a foot of space to turn around in. The company owns the genetics, so they have been manipulated to have big, meaty, white meat breasts.
Right. A breast used to be about the palm of your hand. Now it could feed a family of four.
Right, exactly. In fact, these chickens die if they live much longer than a couple of months because they have heart attacks because of the way they've been manipulated. The company delivers the feed to the grower, and in the beginning, it's a starter feed to make them grow. Chickens are fed antibiotics. In fact, most animals are fed antibiotics, factory-farmed animals, because it's a growth promoter. And, you know, if you're a chicken living in these horrendous conditions, you're bound to get sick. So the antibiotics serve a couple of different purposes. This is, of course, accelerating antibiotic resistance. The chicken is then weaned from the food that promotes its growth, and they basically have to use a feed that cleanses it so that people aren't actually getting the antibiotics and the other chemicals in their diet. The companies provide all the feed.
Delicious.
Then the company sends a truck, and they send chicken catchers, very poorly paid workers who have to scramble around this warehouse, grab the chickens by their legs, and put them in this truck where they're sent to the slaughter facility. The industry has been lobbying to be able to increase the speeds of slaughter at these facilities. They want to be able to do 200 birds per minute. They're trying to completely privatize meat inspection, which has all sorts of horrendous possibilities for the consumer because of salmonella and the bacterial contamination. And you can imagine 200 birds a minute. It's just a terrible situation. Then the grower is completely liable for the waste. And the way that these companies keep the growers in business, these are contract growers, like I said, serfs. They have to make a capital investment in this warehouse. It's often the last-ditch effort to save the family farm. And in rural areas where there are no jobs, they think they're getting a good deal. In the past, the USDA has actually guaranteed these loans. So taxpayers have guaranteed the loans. So the chicken catcher assumes all the debt and all of the liability for the waste, and the company that profits from it gets off scot-free. So that's one of the things that we need to do, is to make these companies actually liable for their waste and make them have fair contracts with these growers. And then that will begin to change the conditions on these terrible factory farms.
I'm speaking with Winona Howder. She's the executive director of Food and Water Watch, organic farmer and author of Foodopoly, The Battle Over the Future of Food and Farming in America. It's published by the New Press, and we'll have more after a break. On the next Fresh Air, Bobby Cannavale. He's starring opposite Al Pacino in the Broadway revival of Glengarry Glen Ross. He talks about the play as well as his other recent roles, including the sadistic gangster Gip Rossetti on HBO's Boardwalk Empire, a tough hospital administrator on Showtime's Nurse Jackie, and more. Tune in at 2 on 93.9 FM WNYC. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo is giving his third State of the State address this hour and will provide coverage as soon as it starts on AM 820. The Leonard LoPate Show will continue uninterrupted on 93.9 FM and WNYC.org. I'm Alicia Menendez of HuffPost Live. In today for Leonard LoPate, this is WNYC and WNYC.org.
WNYC support comes from Penguin Books, publisher of Guitar Zero. Psychologist Gary Marcus explores the process of learning and making music and whether musical ability is innate or can be developed at any age. Now available wherever books are sold. Verizon, whose corporate responsibility initiatives are dedicated to finding solutions to the world's challenges. More at Verizon.com/powerful answers.
New York City's own station, WNYC, in the city where more than 7 million people live in peace and enjoy the benefits of democracy.
WNYC AM and FM.
At WNYC, we'll always stand by you, giving you the facts when you need them most, breaking news that's sometimes tough to hear, connecting you to people across the city and around the world, bringing your voice into the mix. Because sometimes it's good to listen, and sometimes it's great to be heard. WNYC. Never turn it off.
Thank you.
I'm Alicia Menendez of HuffPost Live, and today for Leonard Lopate, our guest today is Winona Howder. She's the author of Foodopoly, The Battle Over the Future of Food and Farming in America. So, you know, Winona, I think what people really want to know is which chemicals are being used on their foods.
Well, you know, there are so many chemicals being used in producing processed food. I mean, I think that one chemical that people aren't aware of is the trisodium phosphate that is used along with some kind of bleach to disinfect meat, because the way that meat is being produced, as I mentioned earlier, the slaughter lines are moving so much faster that rather than slowing down the slaughter lines and doing other things to keep bacteria off of food, the meat industry is basically using chemical washes. So chicken in particular is really a filthy meat. And so trisodium phosphate washes, which the meat is dipped in, and sometimes chlorine-type washes. And, you know, the federal law allows chicken to have water content. So when they use these washes, it actually adds weight to the chicken, and so the company makes more money from it. So, you know, that's just one example. Conventional fruits and vegetables, of course, are raised using all sorts of pesticides and herbicides. And this is something that the food industry is so powerful that they've been able to influence how the Environmental Protection Agency looks at pesticides. And we believe that a lot of these chemicals actually, that there's evidence that they're not safe to use. And in fact, that's why so many people are purchasing organic products. Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the reasons that I wrote Foodopoly is to really try to encourage people to get involved in helping to protect the organic standard, because these...
What do you mean by organic standard?
The organic standard is the rule. In fact, it's a set of rules that the organic industry must use in growing and processing organic food. And there's an organic standards board that kind of oversees this process, and it's associated with the U.S. Department of Agriculture. But today, because 14 of the 20 largest food companies in the country are the biggest producers of organic foods, these companies have representation on the board, and they've been able to do things like introduce synthetics that weren't legal in the past into producing organic food. So it's ironic. Today there's an organic standards board meeting that's being held. But anyway, we believe that there needs to be more transparency in all of this. And in my day job at running Food and Water Watch, it's one of the things that we're really trying to encourage people to get involved. You know, it's not that we want to criticize organic food. It's that we want to make sure that it's a strong, basically brand, and that the criteria used is as strong as possible.
I'm Alicia Menendez in today for Leonard Lopate. We're talking to Winona Howder. She's the author of Foodopoly, The Battle Over the Future of Food and Farming in America. You know, Winona, we have Michael from Queens asking for your opinion on the documentary Food Inc., which I imagine you've seen, and the food company Monsanto's.
Well, yes, absolutely. I think Food Inc. has done so much to educate and engage people. It was a terrific film. Robbie Kenner is a very talented filmmaker, and I know so many people where I go and speak and talk to people have seen the film. So, you know, I think that's the kind of thing that we need out there in the mainstream media, and I encourage anyone who hasn't seen it to get it from Netflix, where you can get it now. Monsanto is a company that controls a tremendous amount of seed. And in fact, they are a company that controls...
Talk about that. Talk about what you mean by controlling seed.
Well, you know, seed is a really important item for farmers. They have to buy seeds, right, or save seeds.
And now they have to rebuy them every year.
Yes. Well, they have to rebuy them if they're genetically engineered. And so Monsanto is a company that's been around for decades and decades. They were involved in making Agent Orange, for instance. And
it's
they
quite the claim to fame.
Yeah. And they began buying up seed companies. They decided that back in the 80s that their ticket to success was getting into seeds and biotechnology. So over the course of several years, they purchased, you know, more than a dozen seed companies. And meanwhile, they were developing a seed that would be tolerant of herbicides. And so Monsanto then sells the herbicide, so they benefit both from selling these genetically engineered seeds and then from selling an herbicide. And as the herbicide has been used, weeds have become tolerant to it. So now people are using more and more herbicides. Meanwhile, Monsanto controls 90% of the corn seed that farmers plant, and something like 75 to 80% of soy seed. And most farmers are now that grow commodity crops are using genetically engineered seeds because that's what's sold. And also Monsanto is buying up other kinds of seeds. So they basically control a lot of our genetics, our genetic heritage, our genetic commons. And now, under the Obama administration, we're seeing more and more genetically engineered products come on the market. You know, before, it was mostly things that are ingredients in processed foods, so genetically engineered corn, soy, that type of thing. Now we're seeing things come on the market like sweet corn, apples. The FDA, Food and Drug Administration, is about to legalize genetically engineered salmon. We call it frankenfish.
I know. Who wants to eat fish from a farm?
It's outrageous. And I think it's why right now there's so much excitement and activity around labeling genetically engineered food. You know, I think it's both a way to educate people about what...
Freak fish.
Yeah, about what it is. And we need labeling laws. And the industry knows people don't want to eat this. And so they do everything that they can do to defeat these labeling initiatives.
You know, I was going to ask you what led you to become an organic farmer, but I think you have answered that question in telling me what most food looks like. We have Jeanette from Manhattan who wants to know your feelings about not organic food, but that which doesn't have hormones or bacteria.
Well, I'm not sure what she means by the bacteria, but the
in other words, local.
Oh, local. Absolutely. You know, I'm a big supporter of local agriculture. You know, I was lucky. I inherited a farm 45 miles from Washington, my family's farm, Washington, D.C., and my husband actually runs it. And we haven't certified as organic because there's a lot of paperwork. And what we do is encourage people to come out, visit the farm, see the practices.
Nice.
People are there all of the time. And one of the things that the way that the organic standards were written, it makes it very difficult for smaller farmers to become certified. So I think that local production is exciting. And I think that having people go out and see how their food is grown is one of the best things that people can do. However, I don't think that the local food movement is enough to actually take care of the dysfunction in our food system. I think we need to politically engage in these things, and we need people who are interested in food, who go to the local farmers market, who care about these issues, to do more than vote with their fork. We need them to vote with their vote and to also get engaged in some of these other political issues and trying to hold our elected officials accountable for their policy positions on these things.
Give me your 15-second pitch on why organic food's worth the money.
Well, I think organic food, even with all of the pimples, is worth the money because it's raised without using chemicals and herbicides and pesticides, and I think that we're safer.
All right. I've been speaking with Winona Howder. She's the executive director of Food and Water Watch, an organic farmer and the author of Foodopoly, The Battle Over the Future of Food and Farming in America. It's published by The New Press. Winona, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.